Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This podcast contains descriptions of violence against children and adult language and is not suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hi guys, and welcome to Suffer the Little Children, the true crime podcast giving voices back to the victims of child abuse and shining a harsh spotlight on the parents, guardians, and caretakers who silence them. I'm your host, Lane, and this is episode 37, Scotty McMillan. On November 4th, 2014, police responded to a trailer home in West Collin Township, Pennsylvania, where they found 3-year-old Scotty McMillan dead on a deflated air mattress, covered with cuts, bruises, and puncture wounds. Scotty's mother and her boyfriend confessed to spending the days leading up to Scotty's murder, torturing the little boy, beating him with various homemade weapons, tying him up with electrical tape, and even hanging him from his feet to beat him, ultimately to death. The trigger for this prolonged, cold-blooded attack was the tiny, defenseless child refusing to eat a piece of toast. Worse yet, Scotty's 6-year-old brother, who also lived in the home, was not only abused himself, but had also witnessed and been forced to participate in the torture of his little brother. 3 adults were ultimately charged with various offenses related to Scotty's death. This is the shocking story of Scotty McMillan. My sources for today's episode are the Philadelphia Inquirer, Penn Live Patriot News, Philadelphia Magazine, Google Maps, The Daily Mail, Find a Grave, The Times Herald, ABC 7 Chicago, Justia U.S. Law, Lehigh Valley Live, Delco Times, Crime and Capital Punishment Forums, Patch, James Terry Funeral Home, Phoenixville News, the Chester County website, Pennsylvania's United Judicial System, and Facebook. I've wanted to cover Scotty's case for a while, but since last week was the 6th anniversary of his death, I felt now was the time. I've received countless stories and tips and case suggestions from listeners and readers of SufferTheLittleChildrenBlog.com, and I truly hope to cover every last one of them at some point, but the disheartening part is that the stories come in much faster than I can cover them all. As I mentioned over my last couple of episodes, 4 to 7 kids die from child abuse in the U.S. every single day. And that's not even mentioning the kids affected by it worldwide, or the children who survive it. I know, realistically, that we may never stop child abuse altogether. That's an unrealistic goal because there will likely always be people who abuse their loved ones behind closed doors. What we can do, however, is continue to raise awareness of these cases and educate people about the signs of child abuse so we can intervene when it is happening and potentially save a child's life by doing so. It does take a village to raise a child, and that includes protecting children from the threats they may face inside their own homes. We all have to be vigilant, and if we see or even suspect abuse or neglect is going on, we have to be willing to report it, no matter who the abuser is. Jillian Tate was born on December 15, 1983, to parents Stephen and Diane. In her early 20s, Jillian was in a relationship with the man who would father both of her sons, Lauren McMillan. Both Lauren and Jillian had distinctive red hair, so it was inevitable that their children would also be blessed with it. The couple's first son, who I'll call R.M., was born in September of 2008. Their second child, Scott Jacob McMillan, who was known as Scotty, was born on January 26, 2011. According to Jillian's family, Lauren was not present for Scotty's birth, and when Jillian left the hospital, she, R.M., and newborn Scotty stayed for a while with her sister, Kim. Jillian was into rave culture, in which huge dance parties characterized by EDM or electronic dance music are attended by people wearing colorful, outlandish clothing, glitter, neon accessories, and plastic beaded jewelry known within the community as candy. Modern rave culture is based on the four principles that make up the acronym PLUR: peace, love, unity, and respect. I'll include some photos of Jillian in rave gear in the Facebook photo album for this episode. With her red hair and blue eyes, she could be downright cute when she tried. Lauren and Jillian never married, and when they finally went their separate ways sometime around the end of 2013, Lauren moved to Kansas to live with his mother. Neither he nor his family had reportedly seen R.M. and Scotty for about a year prior to Scotty's death. The Tate family, however, was close with the boys and spent a good deal of time with them. Their Aunt Kimmy called Scott her little Scooter Pop. Stephen, Scotty's pop-pop, called him Scooter Crunch. Scotty was a precious little boy with straight red hair, crystal clear blue eyes, and a sweet, shy, completely disarming smile. During this time, Jillian suffered from some financial difficulties, as evidenced by an online personal ad she posted seeking a sugar daddy, which, in case you're unfamiliar, is a typically older, wealthy man who dates younger women in need of financial assistance in what they consider mutually beneficial relationships. No word on whether or not she ever found one. All you really need to know is that she talked about both of her sons by name in the personal ad, saying she needed help making ends meet. If that's not just asking for pedophiles to respond, I don't know what is. When Jillian met 23-year-old Gary Fellenbaum in September of 2014, my best guess is he wasn't the answer to either her dreams or her personal ad. He was a 275-pound swamp troll with dark hair clipped close to his head and an unkempt beard who resembled an unpaid extra from The Hills Have Eyes. Jillian met both Gary and his estranged wife, 21-year-old Amber Fellenbaum, while all three worked at Walmart in Parkersburg, Pennsylvania. Amber, a pasty young woman with dyed black hair, was the mother of Gary's 11-month-old daughter, who I'll call SF. Within a month, Jillian, Gary, and Amber, along with Jillian's two boys and Gary and Amber's 11-month-old daughter, had moved into a mobile home together at 96 Hope Lane in West Collin Township, located along the western border of Chester County, Pennsylvania. West Collin is about 20 minutes from Westchester, which is the hometown of Jackass star Bam Margera, and it was also where most of his MTV reality show Viva La Bam was filmed. The mobile home park where the Tates and the Fellenbaums lived for a little over 3 weeks was owned by a man named Harry Phillips, who also owned the property surrounding the neighborhood, which appears, based on an overhead view via Google Maps, to be an extended junkyard filled with abandoned cars, vehicles, and debris. The mobile home park is located just off Old Wilmington Road outside Coatesville, about 35 miles northwest of Philadelphia, and is a few minutes' drive from Natural Lands Sadsbury Woods Preserve. I can't begin to imagine how six people fit inside a single wide trailer home. To my knowledge, most mobile homes of that size have two bedrooms at most, and there's no indication where each family member slept during the 22 or 23 days they lived there. There's no evidence whatsoever that R.M. and Scotty were ever abused prior to moving into the trailer with the Fellenbaums, but that would change immediately when the two families converged under one tiny roof. The last 3 weeks of Scotty's life were, by all accounts, a horrific nightmare, but the worst of the abuse took place during his last 2 days. Scotty's 6-year-old brother, R.M., was also abused during that time, but being a few years older than Scotty, he had the presence of mind to keep quiet and suppress the urge to resist the beatings he received. Scotty, just 3 years old, had no idea that fighting back or trying to get away only further fueled the abuse raining down on him courtesy of his mother's new boyfriend, Gary, and by his mother herself. Gary and Jillian reportedly found Scotty's resistance funny. The real torture began on the morning of Monday, November 3, 2014, when Gary made Scotty a piece of cinnamon sugar toast for breakfast. Scotty apparently wouldn't or couldn't eat the toast, and repeatedly spit it out, to which Gary responded by trying to force it into the 3-year-old's mouth. When he met with continued resistance, instead of punishing the little boy with a timeout or a stern scolding, Gary, who took Scotty's refusal to eat as a sign of the toddler's disrespect, began punching Scotty in the face and stomach. As much as it pains me, I can't help picturing that horrific scene. A hairy, 275-pound nightmare of a man, pulling his arm back and propelling it forward with all his strength into the sweet baby face of this beautiful, red-haired, blue-eyed cherub. I've said it before, and I'm sure this will always be true, but I can't imagine what has to go through someone's head for them to be not only willing, but able to hurt a child this way. I doubt I'd ever have the ability to punch an adult like Gary reportedly punched Scotty, let alone a toddler. Anyway, the so-called punishment continued after Gary and Jillian took Scotty into one of the bedrooms, where they both proceeded to beat Scotty. Gary picked up the 3-year-old and slammed him into the wall. Scotty was beaten, according to Chester County District Attorney Thomas Hogan, with homemade weapons such as a whip, a curtain rod, and an aluminum strip. Later evidence showed they also used a wooden spoon and their closed fists. The whip in question appeared to be a piece of blue and white braided nylon rope that they had fashioned into a rudimentary cat-o'-nine-tails using duct tape, which was also wrapped around one end of another torture implement to avoid Gary hurting his dainty little hand. At some point during the torture that took place on November 3rd, Gary or Jillian slammed Scotty's head into the wall, denting the drywall. This punishment wasn't reserved for just Scotty. Reportedly, R.M. was also slammed into the wall. The two little boys' heads left several indentations in the wall, photos of which were later provided to the public by the DA's office. When at some point Scotty mercifully lost consciousness, these two hell beasts tossed him under a cold shower to revive him, only to continue their campaign of inhumane violence against Jillian's own 3-year-old son. The next morning, Tuesday, November 4th, Scotty's face was red and swollen from the previous day's assault, so again he refused to eat the toast Gary made for him. Feeling Scotty was once again disrespecting him, Gary punched the baby so hard he fell off the chair, only to pick him up, set him back into the chair, and punch him again. When Scotty tried to squirm away, as any 3-year-old who had just been punched repeatedly in the face would obviously do, Gary found a roll of black electrical tape in a nearby drawer and tied Scotty's wrists to the posts of the chair so his arms were elevated. After taping Scotty's feet to the chair so he couldn't free himself, Gary then resumed his onslaught of closed-fisted blows to the little boy's face and stomach. Before long, Jillian joined in on the assault, the two of them beating Scotty with their improvised implements of torture, including the bent metal curtain rod, their homemade whip, and their closed fists. They even forced 6-year-old R.M. to hit his younger brother throughout the attack. When having Scotty taped to a chair no longer held their interest, Gary and Jillian freed him, but what they did to him was somehow even worse. This time they employed a punishment they had used in the past with both Scotty and R.M. They tied Scotty up by his feet and hung him upside down over a door to continue torturing the innocent 3-year-old boy whose only crime had been refusing to eat a piece of toast. As Scotty hung from the door, his mother and her disgusting paramour reportedly laughed as they beat this helpless baby with a frying pan. Let me just remind you that no matter how much this sounds like the plot of a cheesy horror movie, this is real. Soon Scotty started vomiting, and shortly thereafter he became unresponsive. Using one of their thus far tried and true tricks, Gary and Jillian once again doused Scotty with ice-cold water in the bathtub. This time he wouldn't wake up. Considering this yet another sign of disrespect because he's clearly a fucking Neanderthal, Gary decided they would simply let Scotty sleep. They changed the little boy's clothes, watched him for a while to see if he would awaken, and ultimately left him on a deflated air mattress with blood coming out of his nose, mouth, and ears. Then, leaving the kids home with Amber, Jillian and Gary left the mobile home to do a little car shopping. While they were out, they picked up a pizza for dinner. When they returned to the trailer, they checked on Scotty, who was still unconscious. He had, in fact, been in a comatose state for most of the day. Nonetheless, Jillian and Gary ate their pizza, engaged in some kind of sexual activity that I refuse to picture, thank you very much, and then Jillian casually settled in for a nap while her own child lay there dying. If there is a hell, there's a very special place in it reserved for these two. When she awoke from her nap at around 7:30 p.m., Jillian discovered that Scotty wasn't breathing. Only then did she display any semblance of urgency or concern for her son's well-being, screaming for someone to call 911, which Amber did around 7:45 p.m. first responders arrived at 96 Hope Lane to find 3-year-old Scotty McMillan dead on a deflated Blue Air mattress, covered head to toe in bruises, lacerations, and even puncture wounds. They attempted unsuccessfully to revive Scotty before transporting him to the hospital, where even the most seasoned ER nurses wept at the sight of the little boy's battered body. There was no part of this child left uninjured. Scotty was pronounced dead at Brandywine Hospital in Collin, Pennsylvania, on the evening of November 4, 2014, after a mere 3 years, 9 months, and 9 days on this earth. RM was also found to be injured, and he was taken to Alfred I. DuPont Hospital for Children in Wilmington, Delaware, which was about a 50-minute drive from the mobile home park. Police who responded to the trailer found the multiple instruments of torture that had been used to assault the two boys. The family, according to District Attorney Tom Hogan, had only a single photograph of Scotty in the home. In fact, most of the photos you'll find in the Facebook album I created for this episode have been provided over the years to various news sources and on various Facebook pages by other members of Scotty's family. One of the first responders on the scene, Katie McDevitt, posted this message on Facebook in 2019.
It's been 5 years, and I can still remember the chaos followed by deafening silence. I can feel my adrenaline racing and then coming to a screeching halt. I can hear the sirens of the ambulances and then the soft cries at the hospital. I remember the looks on everyone's faces after they laid their eyes on you. Scotty, I remember everything about the first and last day I met you. I remember my hands on your little, cold body. I remember the color of your hair. I remember just how small you were. All of it. Your story forever changed my life. I am so sorry that your life was cut so short, and I'm sorry that I, personally, couldn't save you. I remember you, Scotty, and I always will. Rest in peace, Scotty McMillan, the little red-headed boy who will forever be in my heart.
When questioned by police, all three adults in the home readily told investigators about the events of the 2 days of hideous torture. Gary and Jillian confessed to their part in Scotty's torture and beating. Jillian confessed to County Detective James Siliberto and Township Officer William Smith that Gary had started disciplining her sons with spankings on the buttocks, but as time progressed, he began hitting them with closed fists in the head, face, chest, and legs. Remember, only 3 weeks had passed since they moved in together.
Boy, that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
Even as Jillian admitted to noticing the wounds and scars accumulating on her sons' bodies over the previous 3 weeks, she showed no emotion. An arrest affidavit in the case states,
"During one incident, Gary hung Scott and R.M. up by their feet one at a time and beat the boys while they were hanging upside down." Jillian stated she and Gary were laughing during the incident.
Also according to the affidavit, Gary
admitted that Scott was heavily bruised from the assaults. Asked why he did not contact 911 when he saw that Scott was unresponsive, Gary stated that he was afraid he would be in trouble with the police and child services if the injuries to Scott were discovered.
At the time of Scotty's death, his older brother, R.M., was enrolled in kindergarten at Rainbow Elementary School in the Coatesville Area School District. He had, however, been absent for the 2 weeks leading up to his younger brother's death. Had R.M. been present in school, his obvious injuries would undoubtedly have triggered an investigation by Chester County Children and Youth Services. Prior to the boys and their mother moving into the mobile home with Gary, Amber, and their infant daughter, there had been no reports whatsoever from teachers or school staff, or anyone else for that matter, about seeing any suspicious bruises or injuries on R.M. or Scotty. At a press conference held by D.A. Tom Hogan, it was revealed that Scotty's death may have been prevented if Jillian had updated the school with their new address. During the 2 weeks RM was absent, according to Superintendent Kathy Tashner, school staff followed protocols and made multiple unsuccessful attempts to contact RM's parents by phone, in writing, and by visiting the address on file. Following Scotty's death, she ordered an internal review of processes in light of the failure of school officials to make contact with RM's family. I honestly can't find fault with the school in this case. It was the middle of flu season, for one thing, and surely RM wasn't the only child absent for an extended period of time. School staff really did seem to try every method available to them to contact Jillian. I do hope that since Scotty's death, they've included in their updated procedures the requirement of contacting police after a certain amount of time without contact being made. After an autopsy, Scotty's death was ruled a homicide caused by multiple blunt force trauma after suffering for days without medical treatment for his grievous internal injuries. On Thursday, November 6, 2014, 31-year-old Jillian Tate and 23-year-old Gary Lee Fellenbaum were each charged with multiple crimes related to the death of 3-year-old Scotty Jacob McMillan. For each of the following crimes charged, there was an additional charge of conspiracy to commit the same. Their charges in common included murder of the first degree, murder of the third degree, a first-degree felony, criminal homicide, a first-degree felony, 2 counts of endangering the welfare of children, a third-degree felony, 2 counts of first-degree misdemeanor possession of an instrument of crime with intent, aggravated assault, a first-degree felony, simple assault, a first-degree misdemeanor, and recklessly endangering another person, a second-degree misdemeanor. Gary received 1 additional first-degree misdemeanor charge as well for corruption of minors, presumably for forcing RM to hit his brother during the attack. Both were arraigned on Thursday, November 6th by Magisterial District Judge Michael Cabry and held without bail in Chester County Prison, where they would remain for the next 3 years. 21-year-old Amber Fellenbaum did not escape charges either. Shortly after Jillian and Gary were arrested, Amber was charged with 2 third-degree felony counts of endangering the welfare of children and 2 second-degree misdemeanor counts of recklessly endangering another person. 1 count of each crime represented each of Jillian's children who had been left in harm's way by Amber's failure to intervene in the abuse or notify authorities. She was held on a $500,000 bond. After the arrests, District Attorney Tom Hogan held a press conference, which he began with this chilling statement.
Let me tell you about an American horror story.
Hogan said,
Little Scotty McMillan, a 3-year-old at the beginning of his life, is dead. Over a 3-day period this week, he was systematically tortured and beaten to death. He was punched in the face and in the stomach. He was scourged with a homemade whip. He was lashed with a metal rod.
He was tied to a chair and beaten. He was tied upside down by his feet and beaten. His head was smashed through a wall.
He continued.
And at the end of that, he had bruises on top of bruises all over his body.
Telling the gathered reporters that it did not appear drugs or alcohol were involved in the crime, Hogan described the events of November 3rd and 4th as
just evilness. It is an unspeakable act of depravity.
He said that the boys' punishments started out as spankings and evolved into
concentrated, repeated, escalating abuse.
And who did this? To Scotty McMillan? His own mother, Jillian Tate. And his mother's boyfriend, Gary Fellenbaum. And why was he abusing them? Because he felt they had disrespected him, a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old.
Describing how Scotty was taped to a chair and beaten, Hogan said,
Gary Fellenbaum is a 275-pound man, and he is punching a 3-year-old boy in the head.
After Scotty was unconscious, Hogan continued,
What did the defendants do then? They stuck him in the shower to revive him. To bring him back for more abuse.
Describing the events of the next day, Hogan said,
Gary Fellenbaum and Jillian Tate tied the 2 boys up by their feet over a door and beat them. And while they were doing that, they were laughing.
Hogan told reporters about the weapons used to beat Scotty.
You notice it's got tape wrapped around it. That's so the defendant wouldn't hurt his hand on the sharp edges.
After Scotty became unresponsive, Hogan said,
They went shopping and went out for pizza.
Hogan somberly told the reporters,
While the rest of the country was watching for the election returns, little Scotty McMillan was breathing his last.
Scotty, Hogan explained, was brought to the ER at Brandywine Hospital in Collin, adding,
When his body went into the emergency room, our ER nurses, who see a lot of terrible things, when they saw his body, they wept.
Suppressing tears, Hogan said,
Say a prayer for little Scott McMillan. The brief nightmare that was his life is over.
As for Scotty's brother, Hogan said,
It's going to take us years to put him back together again, physically and mentally.
Hogan assured the public that justice would be served for Scotty.
We will seek the death penalty in this case.
He said the death penalty would be sought against Gary and Jillian using the aggravating factors of the victim's age, under 12, and torture. For Jillian in particular, the death penalty would be an appropriate
punishment for watching her boyfriend beat her young sons regularly and torturing them for petty misdoings, helping him at times and never raising a hand to stop the abuse. I promise you that, though the heavens may fail, justice will be done to these defendants.
Scotty's death touched hearts around the world, and several Facebook groups quickly sprung up in his memory. A Light Up the Night for Scotty event was created, asking people everywhere to light candles one particular evening at 7 p.m. in a symbol of solidarity and love for Scotty. At a local church, a candlelight vigil was organized for both Scotty and for Jacinda Miller, a young mother who died on the evening of November 3, 2014, when she was ambushed in the Brandywine YMCA parking lot, where her ex-boyfriend shot her to death before turning the gun on himself. A co-worker of the three defendants in Scotty's case, Tracy Nagel, attended the vigil, telling a reporter,
"There were signs. He's a very angry, scary man. I have a teaching degree. I should have done something."
Other vigil attendees also spoke to news outlets.
To see a child hurt by its parents and to see a mother killed and her sons without a parent, it just hit you. It hit you right in the middle of the heart.
It's one of the most horrific things that's ever hit this area.
The infamous Riders Motorcycle Club of Chester County organized an event at which they collected toys, clothing, and almost $1,000 in funds for Scotty's older brother, R.M. Group President Alex Arroyo told a reporter that the gifts were delivered to R.M. and his aunt who was caring for him. Arroyo described the six-year-old as delighted. The Chester County District Attorney's Office even helped set up a trust fund to benefit R.M., called the Chester County Angel Trust, managed by DNB, First Wealth Management, in Exton, Pennsylvania. R.M. was initially taken in by Jillian's sister, Kim Tate, but the boy's paternal aunt, Tara Cluxon, who hadn't seen her nephews in about a year, said she and her husband, Robert, wanted custody of their surviving nephew.
"We're going to do everything we can to get him back into our family and get him safe."
Tara said their side of the family had no idea Scotty and R.M. were in danger, and that in fact, Jillian
really seemed to love those kids,
regularly posting photos of the boys on her Facebook page until about a month before Scotty's death. Tara described R.M. as a smart, funny boy, adding that Scotty looked a lot like his father and had been a happy baby. She also said that her parents had frequently helped out Lauren and Jillian when they first started out, and that
anyone in the family would have swept those kids up in a second
if they knew there was a problem.
"We just had no clue. What kind of people do things like that? There's not even words for it."
Others had plenty to say about the case as well, including neighbors in the mobile home park.
"It's horrible. How could anyone allow it to happen to their kid?"
"Sickos. It's glad I didn't know nothing about it, because would hit the fan."
"It's disgusting, disturbing, and I can't believe it happened across the street."
"I didn't see the kids at all. I've seen them in the bow window a couple times, but other than that, I haven't seen them outside or anything."
"And someone to do something like that to a child? They have to be possessed, or they're evil."
Shannon Taylor, a friend who used to hang out with Jillian several years before, said the Jillian she knew was a
normal, goofy, everyday funny girl
when they used to hang out.
"I never would have pictured her hurting a fly."
She saw Jillian working at Walmart a couple weeks before the murder and said she was
pretty rough looking. She just looked like she didn't care about herself, really.
As I said before, if you look at Jillian's mugshot as compared to her previous pictures, I think you'll agree with that statement. Gary's mother, Paula Fellenbaum, spoke to a reporter outside her parents' house in central Pennsylvania. She defended Gary, saying he was being railroaded. He confessed, but okay. Paula said her son was a good kid, and she didn't believe he beat his girlfriend's 3-year-old son to death.
"I believe he's being railroaded. He liked kids. He never had an issue. I don't understand at all."
Tearfully, she said her son was a hard worker,
trying to make his way in the world.
Gary's father and grandmother also spoke briefly with reporters.
"I just think my kid's being railroaded right at this point. At this point, I have no comment."
"But it's been upsetting for the family."
"Yes, it is."
"What's been so upsetting about what you've been hearing?"
"Everything, because I know my son wouldn't do this."
"Of course it was upsetting to me. It's still upsetting to me. I can't believe he would do something like that. Not the way he loves kids and his own daughter."
According to his obituary,
Scotty was laid to rest in a private and beautiful family ceremony on Wednesday, November 12, 2014.
James J. Terry Funeral Homes wrote on their website,
"Funeral arrangements were provided by our funeral home, and it was our honor to serve this sweet little boy and his family."
Scotty was laid to rest in the Northwood Cemetery in Downingtown, Pennsylvania. In 2016, the United Way of Chester County dedicated one of its Born Learning Trail initiatives at the Struble Trail in Downingtown to honor Scotty. Struble Trail follows the east branch of the Brandywine Creek as it flows toward Downingtown. According to the Chester County website,
The Born Learning Trail is part of the United Way of Chester County's Early Childhood Education Initiative, designed to assist parents and caregivers in engaging their young children in quality early learning activities. The Learning Trail is a series of signs and stenciled prompts that adults can use to help prepare small children for success in kindergarten. A free little library station offers free books along the trail as well. A portion of the trail is dedicated to Scotty McMillan, whose life was taken at a very young age in November 2014.
The segment of trail honoring Scotty is unofficially known as Scotty's Trail.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Jillian was initially assigned public defender Brenda Jones, while Gary was assigned two attorneys from the Chester County Public Defender's Office, First Assistant Public Defender Nathan M. Shanker, and Assistant Public Defender Lorene Kempis. The case languished in the court system for some time, frustrating Scotty's family members and others interested in the outcome of the case. In June of 2016, Gary Fellenbaum asked Judge William P. Mann to remove his public defenders from the case and allow his private hired attorney, George S. Yacoubian, Jr., of Philadelphia, take over. Yacoubian previously represented Linda Ann Weston, the ringleader in the 2011 case known as the Tackany House of Horrors case, as well as the Philadelphia Basement Kidnapping or the Basement of Horrors. Weston and her four co-defendants were accused of luring and abusing mentally disabled people and stealing $212,000 in disability payments. Their victims included six adults and four children between 2001 and October of 2011 in Philadelphia, Texas, Virginia, and Florida. They were arrested after Philadelphia police found four victims locked in the filthy basement of a Tackany apartment building. Weston was charged with two murders as well as kidnapping, racketeering, conspiracy, hate crimes, wire and mail fraud, sex trafficking, and forced human labor. Yacoubian was removed from the case after it was transferred to federal court, where the trial judge decided he didn't have enough experience with capital punishment cases in the federal court system. Because this wouldn't be my podcast if I didn't finish that deep dive, I'll wrap it up by letting you know that 55-year-old Linda Ann Weston was sentenced in 2015 to life plus 80 years in federal prison. Anyway, back to Scotty's story. Judge Mann ruled to allow Yacoubian to take over Gary's case in 2016. In January of 2017, Judge Mann received a letter from Gary on January 10th saying he wanted to represent himself at trial. Neither prosecutors nor defense attorney Yacoubian were aware of the letter. Yacoubian initially requested a competency evaluation, but after speaking with Gary's father, he tried to withdraw the request, saying he thought his client's opinion had been swayed by other jail inmates who
are leading him down the path of bad advice. I believe it is an issue of undue influence and not any underlying mental health issue.
Yacoubian told Judge Mann,
it is clear to me that he is competent to proceed with whatever the next step might be. I believe firmly that he does understand what these proceedings are, what his role is, and what the role of the prosecution and the court are. I believe that he can adequately assist me in his defense.
First Assistant District Attorney Michael Noon, the lead prosecutor on the case, was concerned about the integrity of a future conviction, which could be challenged if the competency issue wasn't settled, saying,
at this point, once competency is raised, the proverbial genie is out of the bottle and needs to be addressed.
The judge ordered Gary Fellenbaum to undergo a competency evaluation, giving Yacoubian 45 days to have his client evaluated. This pushed Gary's trial date, which had been scheduled for April of 2017, to September. Once things got moving in early 2017, though, the dominoes really began to fall. Also in April of that year, Amber Fellenbaum entered a guilty plea to all four charges against her. She was subsequently sentenced to 1.5 to 16 years in state prison and expected to testify against her estranged husband at his upcoming September trial. The same month, Jillian Tate accepted a plea agreement that allowed her to avoid the death penalty by pleading guilty to several of the charges against her. In exchange for her guilty pleas to third-degree murder, two counts of child endangerment and two counts of conspiracy to commit the same, one count of possession of an instrument of a crime with intent, and one count of conspiracy to commit the same,
simple assault and conspiracy to commit the same, and conspiracy to commit first-degree murder, Jillian faced 64 to 128 years in prison instead of the possibility of a death sentence. She was also expected to testify against Gary Fellenbaum at his trial, at which she would be considered a critical witness. At Jillian's plea hearing, First Assistant DA Michael Noon said,
"Essentially, Your Honor, the defendant will act as a living witness to what happened in that trailer."
Due to her impending testimony, Jillian's sentencing wouldn't take place until after Gary's trial. Jillian's attorney, Larry Harmelin of Westchester, said Jillian was
looking forward to putting the matter behind her.
At a pretrial hearing on April 17, 2017, Gary was ruled competent to stand trial. At the same hearing, George Yacoubian, Gary's defense attorney, tried to have statements Gary made to detectives during the hours following Scotty's death thrown out as evidence, arguing that his client was subjected to the
deceptive tactics of police
during questioning. During that hearing, Gary acknowledged that he hit Scotty but denied killing him or even knowing he was dead when he was taken to the township police station that night. He said he thought it was about a child abuse complaint.
"I did lay a hand on him a very limited amount. I spanked his hind end."
He said he would have asked for an attorney if he knew Scotty was dead. However, in an interview transcript read aloud in court, a detective told Gary 2 hours into his interview on November 5, 2014,
"You didn't beat him to bruising, you beat him to death."
After that, Prosecutor Noon argued, Gary even agreed to a second interview with a detective, knowing Scotty was dead. According to Noon,
"It was no mystery to this defendant what Scott's condition was when he sat down with the detective."
He showed Gary photos of Scotty's body, and Gary acknowledged the pictures in a voice devoid of emotion, saying he saw his girlfriend and his wife beat Scotty. Jillian's sister, Kim Tate, also attended that hearing and saw they were showing Gary post-mortem photos of her nephew. She later posted on Facebook,
"Falling to pieces. They are showing pictures of Scotty's lifeless body."
She then commented below,
"The worst part about it was Gary looked at them and was questioned about them for about 30 minutes and had a straight face. Made me sick. He's so evil and looks to have zero remorse."
She said under oath, Gary said he only spanked Scotty. Amber and Jill did the rest. The hearing was also attended by at least one representative of the local chapter of Bikers Against Child Abuse, who was present to show support for Scotty and his family. At the same hearing, Judge Mann denied a defense request to move the trial outside Chester County or bring in an outside jury due to pretrial publicity, saying,
"It's not my impression at this point the court would be incapable of selecting a fair and unbiased jury based on the evidence presented at this point."
In August of 2017, the judge issued a number of orders in the case, including dismissing the defense's motion to suppress statements Gary gave the police the night Scotty died. He did grant a motion to keep one statement from the jury, an offhand remark Gary made,
"This would never have happened if he had just eaten his breakfast."
Likely influenced by the admission of his statements to police into evidence, a month later, on September 8, 2017, Gary also accepted a plea agreement, taking the death penalty off the table and sparing Scotty's older brother, R.M., the trauma of being forced to testify at trial. Gary pleaded guilty to first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit the same, one count of possession of an instrument of crime with intent, and one count of aggravated assault. Prosecutor Noon said,
"This young boy and his now adopted family will be able to live a life and focus on their lives going forward, rather than deal with possible appeals, possible long terms of uncertainty. To get closure, and to get it in this way, was extremely important and ultimately is what our job is."
A letter R.M. wrote to Scotty was read at Gary's sentencing. R.M., by that time 8 years old, wrote,
"Dear Scotty, I am so sorry that you got killed by Gary. I was trying to protect you. I have good news and bad news. The good news is Gary is in jail. The bad news is you are in heaven and not with me."
Gary stared, unflinching and scowling, for the entire hour-long proceeding. He was clean-shaven, wearing a blue button-down shirt and glasses. Besides acknowledging the judge as he read the terms of the agreement, Gary had nothing further to say to the court. At the hearing, Scotty's Aunt Tara and her husband, Robert Cluxon, who had in January of 2017 officially adopted R.M., were in the front row, at times crying silently. They had also written letters which were read at the hearing. In his letter, Robert said that R.M. used to worry about being killed in his sleep and would cry whenever he spilled something because he was so afraid of being punished. By this time, though, he was a friendly 8-year-old who loved Pokemon, soccer, and playing Nintendo.
While your cowardly actions put a dent in his life, he is a survivor. He stands strong, but you stand weak.
Tara was too emotional to read her letter, so Prosecutor Noon read it for her. Tara said she would never forget the image of Scotty holding a Thomas the Tank Engine toy in his casket.
I try not to think about the moment when he realized no one was going to save him.
At the end of the hearing, Judge Mann sentenced Gary to life in a state correctional institution, plus an additional 10 to 20 years. District Attorney Tom Hogan gave a press conference after the sentencing hearing.
All right, Gary Lee Fellenbaum, the defendant in this case, has pled guilty to first-degree murder for the torture and beating of Scotty McMillan, resulting in his death. Gary Lee Fellenbaum has pled guilty to aggravated assault for the beatings he administered to Scotty's older brother. Gary Lee Fellenbaum has pled guilty to conspiracy to commit murder, because when he murdered Scotty McMillan, he did it with his girlfriend, Jillian Tate. And the defendant, Gary Lee Fellenbaum, has pled guilty to possessing instruments of crime, because as he beat and killed Scotty McMillan, he did it with various implements. The defendant has been sentenced to life imprisonment for murder with a consecutive 10 to 20 years. Gary Lee Fellenbaum is going to spend the rest of his life in jail for torturing and killing Scotty McMillan. And in God's good justice, he is going to spend the rest of eternity in hell for what he did to this child. My name's Tom Hogan. I'm the Chester County District Attorney. You're already familiar with the facts of this case. Gary Lee Fellenbaum, the defendant, was living in a trailer with his wife and his girlfriend at the same time. Scotty McMillan and McMillan were the sons of his girlfriend. And over the course of about a week, he systematically tortured and beat this three-year-old child to death. Now, this was filed originally as a death penalty case. We don't seek the death penalty often in Chester County. We reserve it for the worst of the worst. This defendant was the worst of the worst, and he was going to get the death penalty. We had hours of his confession. We had both his wife and his girlfriend cooperating against him. We had the condition of Scotty McMillan's body. A three-year-old child covered with bruises from days of being beaten. That body made doctors and nurses, hardened investigators, weep when they saw it. Our only problem with getting the death penalty in this case, we've been getting 12 good Chester County citizens to be able to sit through the psychological horror of witnessing what happened to this child. So why was the defendant allowed to plead guilty and get life imprisonment? One reason. In order for us to go to trial to get the death penalty for Gary Lee Fellenbaum, we would have had to have had Scotty's older brother testify as a victim and as a witness. And while I was perfectly happy to pursue the death penalty against Gary Lee Fellenbaum, it wasn't in my heart to make go through the agony of reliving the murder of his little brother by forcing this case to trial. So the great irony of this plea is that Gary Lee Fellenbaum's life was spared because of a child, because the people up here did not want to hurt. Gary Lee Fellenbaum's life was saved by one of the child that he beat. Gary Lee Fellenbaum is proof that there is evil in this world. If you read Dante's Inferno, they talk about nine circles of hell, and the ninth and worst circle is reserved for traitors, for treachery. Seventh circle is actually reserved for murderers, but just regular murderers. The good people of Chester County would like there to be a 10th circle of hell. 10th circle of hell reserved for anyone who would beat, torture, and kill an innocent child. Gary Lee Fellenbaum should be sentenced to the 10th circle of hell.
Jillian Tate received her sentence on December 12, 2017. At the hearing, a letter RM wrote to his mother was read aloud in court as Jillian stood, sobbing.
Dear Mom, you, Gary, and Amber were trapped in a house of torture. The torture was you guys. The victims were me and Scotty. Scotty got killed. I got beaten. You are the worst mother I've ever known. You just watched us get hurt. I wish you never met Gary. He is really evil. He nearly killed me. You are the reason Scotty got killed. I thought parents were supposed to protect us. Now you are in jail for your time out.
In his letter, Robert Cluxon said,
I am not sure which child is more unfortunate.
Because RM survived to live with the memory of what he witnessed and endured. He said that while Jillian's life has
not been attractive,
he said,
life presents us all with challenges that we have to navigate.
And that parents
are responsible for the health and safety of their children.
He said that RM sometimes recalled the abuse he endured.
These are the memories that he has. His memories are fear and pain and confusion as to why he wasn't protected. Scotty died alone on a floor, and he watched it and he was alone.
Gary may have inflicted the final blows, Robert said, but Jillian was responsible for her son's safety and well-being.
You should have protected them. You protect your children.
At the end of the hearing, Jillian received her sentence, which was to serve 42 to 94 years in state prison. Judge Mann said to her that Gary Fellenbaum
may very well be a psychopath, but I'm not sure what that makes you. You're their mother. Sadly, we live in a world of real-life American horror stories as monsters move among us. Mothers are meant to be protectors, but when a woman doesn't have that basic instinct, that may make her worse than the psychopaths she allows to harm her children.
In 2018, Jillian and her attorney, Larry Harmelin, had the gall to appeal her sentence, arguing that she didn't receive enough credit for cooperating with the investigation and saving RM from having to testify at trial. Pennsylvania Senior Superior Court Judge William H. Platt denied the appeal in October of 2018. In a 10-page opinion, Judge Platt said that Judge Mann had properly taken into account the arguments against the sentence given to Jillian, but rejected them because of the brutality of her crimes, including participating in her own child's death and the other's severe assault.
A sentencing judge has broad discretion in determining a reasonable penalty, and appellate courts afford the sentencing court great deference, as it is the sentencing court that is in the best position to view the defendant's character, displays of remorse, defiance, or indifference, and the overall effect and nature of the crime.
In his opinion, Judge Platt noted there was
no dispute that Jillian cooperated with the police when she was arrested. She gave them a confession. She presented herself as remorseful. She had no prior criminal record. She described herself as the victim of a manipulative Fellenbaum. She recounted that Fellenbaum restricted her to an hour of sleep a night and forced her to run the household on a budget of $5 a week. She related her own history of PTSD, depression, and an attempted teenage suicide.
However, he said, Judge Mann considered all of this when handing down Jillian's sentence. After the Supreme Court decision, Harmelin said,
I think they made the wrong decision. I think they missed the issue completely. I think that if someone cooperates and agrees to make themselves available to testify at a murder trial, that they should be given some sort of consideration instead of being sentenced to 42 years in jail.
Well, you know what I think? Any mother who not only allows and watches but participates in her boyfriend's torture and murder of her 3-year-old son deserves a hell of a lot more than 42 years in prison, and Jillian ought to accept her sentence and like it. Both Jillian Tate, who is now 36 years old, and Amber Fellenbaum, who is 27, are currently housed at SCI Muncie, which is a medium and maximum security state correctional facility for women located in Lycoming County. 29-year-old Gary Fellenbaum is incarcerated at SCI Huntingdon, a maximum security state correctional institution for adult males that happens to be Pennsylvania's oldest state prison in continuous operation. If there are any future updates on the case, I'll be sure to cover them on sufferthelittlechildrenblog.com. From what I can tell based on posts on various Facebook pages, members of Scotty's family light paper lanterns and release them into the sky on the anniversary of his death every year. Of course, this is where I play the wet blanket and remind everyone that balloon and lantern releases are incredibly dangerous to the environment, to wildlife, and even to humans and buildings. It equates to releasing trash into the sky, and that trash doesn't end up floating into space. It falls back to the earth, where animals can choke on it. It can cause pollution, and the flames in those lanterns can even cause major structure fires. There are still several Facebook pages dedicated to Scotty. His Aunt Kimmy runs a page called Child Abuse Awareness Month, April, RIP Scotty McMillan, 12611 to 11414, where she posted some memories last week in honor of Scotty's angel anniversary on November 4th. Scotty has been gone 6 years as of last week. He should be getting ready to turn 10 in January. By all accounts, Scotty Jacob McMillan was just the sweetest little boy you could ever hope to meet. His favorite color was green, and he loved Thomas the Tank Engine. He was even buried in a blue and white casket with an image of Thomas painted on the lid. Scotty's Aunt Kimmy posted a beautiful tribute to her beloved nephew on Facebook in May of 2015, and it gives a window into the personality of the little red-haired, blue-eyed boy whose face has stolen hearts around the world.
Miss you so much, Scotty. So beautiful, sweet, and innocent. I miss your smile, your giggle, your kisses, your hugs, your high-pitched squeal of excitement. Miss your snuggles, your tickles, your cute little voice, your singing in my back seat, your obsession with Pop Pop's fan. I am so thankful that I was a part of your life the entire time up till your final 3 weeks. I will always treasure our memories, time spent, and photos. It hasn't gotten any easier losing you, but I can only find comfort you are safe and restored with Jesus, and it's not goodbye. One day I'll see you again.
Rest in peace, Scotty. That's it for this week, guys. Join me next week for another case. If you like the show, please leave me a 5-star rating and a positive review on your favorite podcast platform. And please subscribe to Suffer the Little Children on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast listening app. Email tips, comments, questions, or case suggestions to sufferthelittlechildren.pod@gmail.com. You can also subscribe on YouTube by searching Suffer the Little Children Podcast. Visit the website at www.sufferthelittlechildrenpod.com, where you can listen to episodes and become a patron for rewards ranging from a shout-out by name on the show to exclusive gifts. Follow the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Pinterest at Suffer the Little Children Pod, and on Twitter at STLCPod. View photos related to today's case on Facebook and Instagram. Read more about today's case and many others at SufferTheLittleChildrenBlog.com. This podcast was written, hosted, edited, and produced by Lane. Intro theme music is by Dream Note Music. Other music and sound effects for the show were created using sounds from audiojungle.net. Hug your babies a bit closer tonight. Until next week, bye guys.